I'm changing my approach a little from what I normally do in 3, 45, 50-minute sessions on right from wrong, because one, because of who you are, and second, what is burning in my heart. In our first session, it'll be about 45 minutes, and then we'll take a break. I want to share some things that I'm just now starting to share publicly. I believe we are facing one of the greatest threats to the cause of Christ in 2,000 years of the church. And my fear is that so many Christian leaders, denominational leaders, and others are missing what's happening, and within 36 months are going to wake up, shake their heads, and say, "What happened?" Because I am convinced that within 36 to 60 months, we are going to live in a totally, completely different culture than what we live in right now. We are going through this very moment that we're sitting here, the fastest cultural change in the history of America. And I would say 95% of believers are missing it. They're seeing indications of it, but not what is really happening. And I want to address that issue because it's becoming a whole foundation of having to speak out on right from wrong. And what I'm talking about is what has become the number one virtue in America. The number one virtue in America has become the number one threat, or one of the top two or three threats to the cause of Christ. Can anyone tell me what that number one virtue is? Used to be justice, not anymore. Justice is no longer the number one virtue. It's been relegated way down the ladder. What is the number one virtue that we face in America? Anyone?
Tolerance.
Tolerance. My son is 19 years old at the great University of Biola. I got two students there, and I never knew any two students could love an institution as much as Sean and Kelly love Biola University. Well, a year and a half ago, when he was graduating from high school, I spent extra time with him. Each one of my kids, when they graduate from high school, the last 3 months, I spent extra time with them to go over what I've tried to ingrain with them into them their entire life and to get them ready for college. And I said, "Son, have they taught any absolute truth at Julian High School?" Now, an absolute truth is that which is true for all people in all places at all times. I said, "Have they taught you any absolute truth?" He said, "Yes." I expected an immediate no. I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "What?" He said, "Tolerance." My 15-year-old daughter, Katie, I said, "Honey, what is one thing that you fear being called?" She said, "Intolerant." Intolerant. Tolerance has become the greatest threat to everything that you stand for. And here's the problem. So many kids come home from school, and mom will say, "Well, what did you talk about today?" Or, "What went on?" "Well, we talked about tolerance." "Oh, that's wonderful. We need to be tolerant." No, it is not wonderful. And it undermines everything that you believe in. Now, some of you sitting there, and I can just look in your eyes saying, "Wait a minute, Josh. You're off base." No, I'm not. You listen carefully. The reason I'm saying what I'm saying is this, is that we're singing off two different song sheets. You see, we're in a transitional period where there's two distinct definitions of tolerance. One by parents and people our age right here, the other by kids. And what is being ingrained and taught to our kids is totally different than what is in your mind as a parent. And let me explain that. Pretty much here, you have been conditioned by what is referred to as traditional tolerance. It is now referred to as negative tolerance. Negative tolerance. Negative tolerance would be defined by the Random House Unabridged Dictionary, where it says, "Tolerance is to recognize and respect others' beliefs, practices without sharing them, or to bear or put up with someone or something not especially liked." That is how almost everyone in this room has been conditioned with tolerance. Now, that is referred to as negative tolerance. In our circles, we would say and think we're very godly for saying it and very righteous saying, "Well, you know, you're to love the sinner but to hate the sin." You say that in most university classrooms in America and you will immediately be labeled a heretic, a bigot, and intolerant. If you have the gall to say one of the most intolerant statements today, that you are to love the sinner but hate the sin. And the reason is, we're singing off a different song sheet. This is so critical that Dr. Restad Legutko, in an article called The Trouble with Toleration, says, toleration is the ultimate and only generally accepted litmus test of morality. No other single category, not justice, not equality, not even freedom, has won such wide moral support in the Western world. We say things like, you know, I love you, but I don't believe in what you stand for. I love you, but I don't believe in your lifestyle. Now, the way we've been conditioned, that is righteous and that is tolerant. Under the new song sheet, that is so intolerant, it's pathetic. Now, there's a new tolerance out. Now, the new tolerance is called positive tolerance. Over against what you've been conditioned in, negative tolerance. Positive tolerance basically says this. Every single individual's beliefs, values, lifestyle, and truth claims are equal. Now, let me repeat it. Every single individual's beliefs, values, lifestyle, and truth claims are all equal. In other words, there is no, and the new buzzword is, no hierarchy. In other words, there's no truth greater than another truth. There is no belief greater than another belief. There is no value greater than another value or lifestyle. Because the moment you say that your lifestyle is better than somebody else's lifestyle, that is hierarchy, and today that is labeled bigotry, intolerance. Because you're saying there is hierarchy or pyramidal when it comes to values, beliefs, truth claims, or lifestyle. All individuals' beliefs, values, lifestyles, and truth claims are equal. For example, I make this statement, I believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God. This young lady over here says, no, after seeing all the good works and everything else, helping children, I believe Ronald McDonald is the Son of God. Now, we laugh at that, but listen carefully. Under the Constitution, we both have an equal right to hold it. But under tolerance, both are equal. You see the difference? Under the Constitution, you both have equal rights to hold it. Under tolerance, both are equal. In a moment you say that Jesus Christ is greater, that is hierarchy, and that's intolerance and bigotry. The new definition for bigotry and fanatics is this. The fanatic or bigot is no longer a person with excessive religious or quasi-religious and usually mistaken enthusiasm for a certain system of beliefs, but one who chooses some form of hierarchy is a bigot. In other words, you say there's a lifestyle greater than another lifestyle. There's a truth greater than another truth. There's a value greater than another value. That's bigotry today. And that's intolerance, fanaticism, and heresy. Dr. Frederick W. Hill, a school administrator at a national convention, said, it is the mission of public schools not to tolerate intolerance. Because if you tolerate intolerance, you're being intolerant. And you're going to see what I mean by that. We look at people and say, what? You're so inconsistent. You're not being tolerant. Well, if they're tolerant, if most people in culture is tolerant towards you with what you believe, then they're being intolerant. I said to my son, I said, Sean, have they taught you to be tolerant of the intolerant? He said, no. I said, that's right, son. I said, they've taught you to be tolerant of the tolerant and given you permission to be intolerant of the intolerant. He said, Dad, that's right. But he said, none of my friends understand that. I said, that's right. And what Hill was saying is that if we're not intolerant of the intolerant, then we are not being tolerant and we're bigots. All truth is relative to the individual under positive tolerance. All truth is equal because it's only individual expression and opinion and belief. Because an objective God has been removed from Western civilization thought. This is why today they say you don't have morality, you have opinions. That's another new buzzword, opinions. Now, here is a basic difference between negative tolerance and positive tolerance. Under negative tolerance, the word was permission. Whether the gays, lesbians, or what, we want permission from society to live our lifestyle in peace. And we say, okay, you can. We don't agree with you, but you have permission to do it. Under positive tolerance, it's added a word. Now, it's not only permission, but praise. And the new phrase is permission and praise. In other words, we not only want your permission, we demand your praise. And if you do not give us praise, then you're intolerant and you're a bigot. This is why Dr. R.M. Hare, a philosopher, put it this way. He said, tolerance is a readiness to respect other people's ideas as if they were your own. And under positive tolerance, if you do not give praise to another person's beliefs, values, lifestyle, or truth claims as you do your own, then you are intolerant and a bigot. You see, it's totally opposite of what most of us condition with. But when our kids come home and say, oh, we talked about tolerance, in almost every situation, it's positive tolerance. But we are responding as parents with having been conditioned with negative tolerance. We say, oh, that's wonderful, when it undermines everything that we believe. It's like Stephen Kunz said in Liberalism and the Idea of Tolerance. He said, they also desire to be esteemed in this choice by the community and to even win the applause against the will, so to speak, of the fans. And what he's saying is this. If we do not applaud other people's lifestyles, beliefs, values, and truth claims as we do our own, then you're a bigot and you're intolerant. And then as Kenneth Stern, Dr. Stern, writing an article called Battling Bigotry on the Campus, in writing to the university presidents, he said, we must make the university, quote, comfortable for all its members. In other words, no matter what the lifestyle or what, we must not only give permission, we must give praise. And they must feel comfortable that what they're doing, their lifestyle, their belief, their value, their truth claim, is equal in value to anyone else in the campus. That's called positive tolerance. Chuck Colson, in his new novel called Gideon's Torch, hit on it. Chuck is one of a few people that really understand what's happening in culture and can read it. Emily Gunin is a new attorney general nominee in the story. And a conservative senator on the committee is grilling her. Truth, sir, Gunin said, her eyes sparkling, now on the offensive, is when a government sees to it that every individual can enjoy his or her full and equal opportunity. When every man and woman following the dictates of conscience is not just tolerated, but respected in their lifestyle choices, when bigotry, that is saying one lifestyle is greater than another, one value is greater than another, when bigotry is banished from our common life. Every single individual's beliefs, values, truth claims, and lifestyles are equal. That's called positive tolerance. This is not a conspiracy. Please understand that. It's not a group of evil men and women getting together and saying, we're going to destroy evangelical Christianity and the Mormons and the Muslims and everyone else. No. This is not. And everybody likes to find a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. No. There's a lot of people taking advantage of it. I don't blame them. There's many people taking advantage of what's happened historically. I think there's several basic reasons. There's many, but several basic ones of how we got to positive tolerance. One is a natural progression of history to where we are today, not a conspiracy. Going all the way back to the 13th century in Italy, you have a video here, say, of the world, of history. God, the creator God, Western civilization is at the top, created man is at the bottom. Along came the Renaissance. And the Renaissance elevated man about a quarter of the way and brought God down about a quarter of the way. And the Renaissance probably wouldn't have had that great of an impact if it hadn't been followed by the Enlightenment, the age of reason. Man is the master of his soul. Man, through reasoning, can solve all the problems, understand life, everything. And with the Enlightenment, man was elevated up to about halfway, and God was elevated down in Western thought. Then, later on, and there are many other factors playing here, but then came, of all things, the Industrial Revolution. And the Industrial Revolution said, we don't really need God. Look at the great exploits. Look at the great things man can do. And when the Industrial Revolution, philosophically and everything, man was elevated another quarter up to three quarter, and God was elevated down to a quarter from the bottom. And then came Darwinism. And they said, look, we don't even need God to determine the origin of man or the universe. And in Western thought, God fell off the screen, and man was elevated to the position of the creator. And then through a number of other things of mass media, everything else coming along, it has just hit us in the last few years. And all of a sudden, philosophically, in universities and everything, it caught up with us. And all of a sudden say, wait a minute. There is no objective God, which has always been the basis of truth. There's only man. So therefore, all truth is relative. There's no objective truth to appeal to. And if all truth is relative, then truth is an opinion of man. Therefore, all truth is equal. And whatever they determine is morality is just different opinions of man, because there is no objective basis for truth, which you need for morality. And to me, much of this is a progression of history. Another reason is the inconsistency of the body of Christ when it comes to racism. We have believed in the church for years that there is an objective truth in Western civilization. God is the basis of all truth. We have known that truth and understood that truth, but in many segments of the body of Christ, that truth was ignored and racism became deeply ingrained. And so as people look and say, wait a minute, the very actions destroys absolutes. Another and one of the main causes, and you have to think this through a while, is self-image. Self-image is one of the main reasons for positive tolerance today. You say, come on, no. That's why a number of years ago I wrote the book on building your self-image. Because I sensed what was coming down. And if we did not address the issue biblically of self-image, we were going to surrender it to the world. You say, what in the world does self-image have to do with positive tolerance? This. In outcome-based education, Goals 2000, they'll say, the issue is not coming up with the right answer. The issue is the process. Why? And I've sat there and heard them say this. The top lecturers that travel promoting Goals 2000, they'll say, you give 20 questions to a child, and they only get three right, they miss 17. How does it make that child feel? Horrible. You have no right to make anyone feel that way. Education has no right to make someone feel inferior. They say if you give somebody 20 questions and they get 19 right, how does it make that child feel? Horrible. It would make me feel great, but horrible. Why? What if they're a perfectionist and they say, oh, what's wrong with me? Why didn't I get all 20 right? You have no right to make a child feel that way. So therefore, we must teach that all is equal. Those are three of many factors that have brought us today, sociologically, anthropologically, philosophically, and everything, to the point of the most dynamic change in the history of American culture under tolerance. Even the United Nations declared the 90s the decade of tolerance and of doing away with convictions. You see, basically, a lot of people in the world will say, and starting with the United Nations, is convictions is what causes wars. So we must do away with convictions unless it's the conviction about tolerance. And if you do away with the conviction about right from wrong and everything, then you will not have people facing off in war. And that's another reason for it, declared by the United Nations. What are the implications of this? What are the implications of two song sheets right now? And within 36 to 60 months, we will all be singing off one song sheet. See, why do you say that? Many reasons. But one major reason is this. Right now in the universities, no publisher would ever think of producing a book, a textbook that did not go through the tolerance grid. Why? They couldn't sell it. I'd say 98% of all textbooks used in secular universities in America right now have got to go through the tolerance grid. 25% of all the books in the high school, junior high, and elementary. But within 36 months, no publisher would be able to sell a book till an elementary, grade school, junior high, high school without going through the tolerance grid, positive tolerance. I can guarantee you by the time it gets to that, it'll be one song sheet. And if you don't sing off that song sheet, you are a bigot. You are intolerant, and you are a fanatic and a heretic. What are the implications of this? Let me share with you some. Some that's already affected many of you right here, and you don't realize it. One implication is community versus individual ethics. See, America was founded upon community ethics. Western civilization was founded upon community ethics. The church was founded upon community ethics based upon the scriptures. The educational system was founded upon community ethics. The school board. The school board was to represent who to the school system? Who? The parents, the community. They were kind of the watchdog. Because the educational system was not to reflect the educational philosophy, morality, and ethics of the federal government, but of the local area. America was founded on that. The Goals 2000 came along and says, there is no community ethic. There's only individual ethic now. And therefore, school boards cannot represent the community. The ethic, the morality, etc., must come down from the federal government. And that's one of the main thrusts behind Goals 2000 and OBE, outcome-based education, is that there no longer is any community ethic. There's only individual ethic, even though there's pots of it still around the country. Francis Schaeffer, a man whom I believe was a prophet. Francis Schaeffer wrote, if there is no absolute beyond man's ideas, and history now says there isn't. God has passed off the scene, and only man is there, so it's all subjective. There is no objective basis of truth. That if there is no absolute beyond man's ideas, then there is no final appeal to judge between individuals and groups whose moral judgments conflict. We are merely left with conflicting opinions. Let me show you how this has affected the educational system. Within a few years, school boards will be obsolete unless they function as an administrative or fundraising instrument. This last summer, in the front page of the USA Today, came out how like Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., New York, and others are creating schools now without school boards. Because they said, we don't need them, they're obsolete. Why? The school boards were created to represent the community value to the educational system. They said, there is no community value. There's only individual values, and they're all equal. And therefore, the federal government must determine the administration. In July 18, 1995, a judgment rendered by the Supreme Court of the state of Massachusetts, where parents challenged a policy in Falmouth, Massachusetts, this last year of freely and readily handing out condoms to junior high and high school students. And Chief Justice Paul Liakis wrote the judgment for the court. He said, quote, parents have no right to tailor public school programs to meet their individual religious or moral preferences. Not the community. There is no community anymore. And when you do away with the community, the Supreme Court of Massachusetts said, no parent has the right to influence the school system with their individual ethics and morality. And now a precedent has been set. School boards are obsolete because there is no community ethic. There's only individual ethic. Another implication, what I like to call style over substance. And I'll explain this with some word pictures. The church was founded on substance over style. America was founded, Western civilization, for the most part, was founded on substance over style. We've had a complete metaphysical or epistemological shift of knowledge to style over substance. You say, what do you mean? Let me illustrate style over substance. And probably every one of us has done this. You're flipping through the TV channels, and you come across a religious network, and you see some program, you kind of go, oh, you just kind of cringe. What do you immediately do? Flip it off. Let me ask you. Why'd you flip it off? Because you disagreed with the substance? No. You probably had 95% agreement with the substance. You flipped it because of the style. And that demonstrates style over substance. This is what has happened in America. Let me illustrate it. Over the years, now I've given over 22,000 talks at close to 1,000 universities in 83 countries, including Texas. And so I have a little background to make some of these statements. Up until 4 or 5 years ago, in universities, or first let me ask you, who is the number one heretic in universities today? Who's the number one bigot? Anyone? Christian who? Evangelical or evangelist? Say the street evangelist. We'll refer to that. The street evangelist. Someone like myself coming in. About 4 or 5 years ago, up until then, this is the way, Bill, you remember this. This is the way you were heckled. And there's nothing wrong with heckling. I used to plant people in the audience to heckle. You don't have to be a Christian to be heckled. They heckled everyone. It just makes it more exciting. But this is the way you were heckled. I don't believe that. Prove to me that Jesus is the Son of God. I don't believe Christ is raised from the dead. I don't think God exists. Substance. You know how you're heckled today? The moment you say, Jesus is the way, the truth, and life, they won't say, I don't believe that. I don't think Jesus is the Son of God. They'll say, what right do you have to say that? You're a bigot. You have no right to say that. You're intolerant. The issue of the statement is not the key, the truthfulness of it. It's the issue is style. What right do you have to say it? You're saying there's one truth or lifestyle higher than another? Yes. You're a bigot. You're intolerant. Salvation is found in no one else. What right do you have to say that? See, 7, 8, 9 years ago, you wouldn't have heard that. The issue is, would have been, well, I don't believe that. What about Muhammad? What about Buddha? Now is, what right do you have to say that? You're intolerant. There's been a complete epistemological, mean a shift in the source of truth, an epistemological shift in Western thought. And it's now just being fleshed out. Now, you men and women better remember, what I am talking about here is not something that's going to happen. It has already happened. All we're seeing now are the outworkings of it. There has been a complete shift. And I've talked to so many Christian leaders, and I've talked to people within Crusade even. And they'll say, oh, Josh, you're getting upset over nothing. Look, I have faith in America. I had one leader say, well, look at all the Republicans that were elected. And I say, yeah, look at them. America won't stand with this. They'll rise up. I say, you're forgetting one thing. As far as I know in the history of America, it's the first time we've had a sociological, anthropological change based upon an epistemological shift of truth. It's never happened before in America as far as I know. And I cannot find any time in history where an epistemological shift was ever reversed. Rationalism? Humanism? Enlightenment? Darwinism? No. And if God tarries enough, in a number of years, you will look back to tolerance the same way people look back to humanism, rationalism, enlightenment, Darwinism, everything. It'll be equal to all that. So we better wake up. We are facing something we have never faced before in the history of the American Western world, and that is a cultural change based upon an epistemological shift of truth. And that makes it a whole different ballgame. Another implication, comparative religion and philosophy. Many of you here have taken courses in comparative religion. I have, in comparative philosophy. And the purpose of the studies is stated in the handbooks and everything. The student guides and all was, you're to take this course in order to evaluate, to place a value on the truth claims of different religions. Are they true? Are they false? Or what? Different philosophies. You can't study that way anymore. I was sharing this several months ago with about 200 youth directors and pastors in Chicago. And at this point, a youth pastor stood right up to his feet and he said, Josh, I'm a graduate student at Northwestern University. right now. And he said, I'm taking a class in comparative religion. I thought, I'm going to try this out, because I had everything typed right out here. I said, is the purpose of the course to evaluate the truth claims? He said, oh, no. I said, what is it? And you thought he was literally reading my notes. He says, no. It's to understand and appreciate. You see the difference? You no longer study comparative religion philosophy in order to evaluate the truth claims, because that is hierarchy, and that is intolerance and bigotry. Now you study in order to understand so you can appreciate. See, this is what your kids learn, intolerance in the schools. And they come home and say, oh, that's wonderful, you studied tolerance today. But when you really get down into the inner workings of it, they did it not to evaluate, but rather to understand in order to appreciate, because all is equal. And this is why some of you already, with kids that are 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, will start to question some of your beliefs and your attitudes. Because you're living under negative tolerance. Another implication is this, and we better wake up to it. Francis Schaeffer came onto the scene and said, we no longer live in a Judeo-Christian culture, meaning Judeo-Old Testament, Christian-New Testament, that the ethics and morality of society are derived from the Old and New Testament. He said, we now live in a post-Judeo-Christian culture. Well, I believe if Francis Schaeffer were here, he would say what I've been saying now. We better wake up. We no longer live in a post-Judeo-Christian culture, Bill. We live in an anti-Judeo-Christian culture. And if you can resolve this riddle, you know what I'm talking about. If you can resolve this riddle, you will know already what has happened. Why? Why is a crucifix, a cross in a jar of urine, intolerance or tolerance? But a rainbow, a gay symbol in a jar of urine is intolerance and will not be stood for. Why is a crucifix in a jar of urine tolerance? Totally acceptable and righteous. But a rainbow, a gay symbol in a jar of urine, is intolerance and will not be stood for. When you can resolve that riddle, you'll know what I'm talking about. And you'll know what has already happened. Not what's going to happen. What has already happened, and now the workings of it is being worked out. We no longer live in a post-Judeo-Christian culture. We live in an anti-Judeo-Christian culture. Another implication is that tolerance eliminates justice. Say, what? Yes. Tolerance and justice cannot coexist. Tolerance is the enemy of justice, and justice undermines everything that tolerance stands for. Now, justice used to be the number one virtue in America. Martin Luther King Jr. couldn't open his mouth with a paragraph without saying justice. But the new younger civil rights leaders, they don't want to mention it. Now they talk about tolerance, 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 tolerance. Why? Because justice is the enemy of tolerance. You say, come on, Josh, how can you say that? Very easily, men and women. Justice says there is a moral basis for discerning right from wrong. Without a moral basis to discern right from wrong, you cannot have justice. Tolerance says there is no moral basis. If you say there's a moral basis, it totally undermines tolerance. And so tolerance and justice cannot coexist. For a few months, maybe 2-3 years maximum, you use hear the two terms used. But already you see it tapering off. You hardly ever hear somebody really appeal to justice anymore. It's tolerance. It's tolerance. Positive tolerance. Then, tolerance eliminates moral indignation. Unless that moral indignation is against intolerance. You see, if all values, beliefs, lifestyles, and truth claims are equal, you rule out moral indignation, because the moment you express moral indignation, you are expressing intolerance. That now in many places publicly you express moral indignation and you're chastised for it, because you're saying there's hierarchy. It eliminates courage. Courage is good people doing that which is right within the culture and willing to die for. Well, if everything's equal, all truth is equal to heresy, whatever. If all values, beliefs, lifestyles are all equal, what is there to drum up courage for except the courage for tolerance? I spent a lot of time with youth workers. And a good illustration of it was recently I was at EDS, Electronic Data Systems, their new headquarters. And I was in their executive board meeting with some of their top corporate executives, and one woman spoke up and she said, "I'm an associate staff with Young Life." I thought, "Whew, I'm not alone in this room." And she said, "But Josh, what do I do?" She said, "It's getting so hard to motivate kids, to get them to live for Christ. It's so much harder now than 5, 10, 15 years ago." And I said, "Lady, you think it's hard now? It's nothing compared to what it's going to be as tolerance takes a greater grip, because you eliminate courage. You eliminate courage. Taking a stand, unless it's for tolerance and against intolerance. Then tolerance eliminates convictions. Voice. There's no truth worth defending except tolerance. Because all truth is equal." C.K. Chesterton remarked, "Tolerance is a virtue of a man without convictions." Wolfgang von Goethe said, "Why did I seek the past so yearningly if I should not share it with my brother?" You see, there's an erosion of confidence that truth can even be discovered in Western civilization, and now East. Because God, objective truth, has passed off the scene. Truth no longer seems worth protecting except the truth of tolerance. And what is happening is a privatization of convictions. In other words, there is pressure to be silent about your convictions if those convictions are offensive to others. Let me ask you all right here. Don't have to respond publicly, just to yourself. When I do this with pastors, it's very sobering. How many of you right here are more hesitant to take a stand for Christ or make statements about Christ when you know that in that setting it will be offensive? How many are more reluctant now than you were 5, 8, 10 years ago? It's called tolerance. You say, "Well, Josh, I can handle it." Yes, you and I probably can. But can our children and our grandchildren right now? No. The issue is not, can you handle it? The issue is, can our children and our grandchildren? And I'd have to say right now, no. Because we're singing off two different song sheets. A privatization of convictions. This is why down in Baltimore, when young Brian McConnell, 15 years old in the middle school there, his grandmother died, and he asked his mom if he could make the tombstone. And she said yes. So at shop at school, he made a large cross. He cut it out, sanded it, varnished it, stained it, and he went to put the crossbar on, and the teacher immediately stopped him and said, "You can't do that," to a 15-year-old kid. And later the school explained it this way. "If we allowed you to put the crossbar on, it'd be intolerance." He had to take it home and do it. Why is a crucifix and a jar of urine tolerance? But a rainbow, the gay symbol, in a jar of urine is intolerance and will not be put up with. When you can resolve that riddle, you will know what has already happened. And now it's just the working out in culture and society. What do we do? It's one of the reasons we launched the Right from Wrong campaign. I believe we need to pursue truth. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. But think of this. That very act, in a matter of months and several years, will label you a bigot and intolerant. You see, right now, most of you are the good guys. Our staff out on the campuses are the good guys, more or less. Youth directors and churches are the good guys in the community. within 36 to 60 months, they will be the bad guys. Because we no longer live in a post-Judeo-Christian culture. We live in an anti-Judeo-Christian culture. And we better equip our staff, our kids, and our grandkids to deal with that. If they're going to survive. We must identify with justice in a way that we never have in the past. And I really believe in a matter of months, maximum 60 months, you go to a town meeting and you make a statement, well, that's not just. That is wrong. The entire crowd would turn on you because you're not being tolerant. Bill, what's the number one verse historically has been quoted by Christians in the church? What would it be, do you think? John 3:16. Do you know what it is now? You know what it is now? Judge not that you be not judged. You think how many times you hear it? Judge not. Not John 3:16 anymore. Judge not that you not be judged, because you, if you judge, you're being intolerant. And most pastors agree with me now. That's the number one verse quoted by Christians. Judge not that you be not judged. We must affirm beliefs so that they become convictions. Here is one of the problems we face. We face it in our high school ministry, our university ministries. We face it in our lay ministries and all. We face it from those as parents who have been conditioned by the 60s and the 70s. You see, one of the problems we have with kids today is not so much the kids, but the parents, because they were influenced coming up through the 60s and the 70s. Many became Christians, but philosophically, even theologically, their mindset never changed. I see this over and over again. It's like we did the right from wrong book. We did more research and testing on this than I'd say any other five products we've ever committed, created in our specific ministry. Because we knew how vital this was. And we'd meet with parents. We sent the transcript out with 3-4 page questions to evaluate it, and then to meet with me for Saturday, like 10, 11, 12 hours from every walk of life, every background and everything. Mom, Dad, everyone. And the first question always was this. Always, Josh, from parents, says, you got to help us. I'm a product of the 60s and 70s. I don't even know what values to pass on to my children, let alone how to pass them on. The number one comment. Now, I do not use statistics flippantly. I can usually pretty well objectively back up statistics that I use. And I'll make these statements here. If you disagree with me, let me know. I've done this with over 2,000 youth workers, and so far it's been 100% unanimity. In fact, many of them said, wow, now I see what our challenge is. And this is one of the greatest challenges we have with our staff, with our own children, everything. When it comes to the basis of discerning right from wrong, I estimate that 70% of our young people is based upon feelings. Now you think it through. I feel that this is wrong. Dad, I don't feel that's right. Pastor, I feel this is right. No, I don't. You know, Josh, I just don't feel that's right. It's based upon a feeling. 20 to 25% are based upon beliefs. Pastor, I believe that's wrong. Mom, I don't believe that's right. I believe that's wrong. 5% or less is based upon convictions. Pastor, that is wrong. Mom, that is right. Josh, that is wrong. And one of our greatest challenges is to take our kids and our parents from feelings to convictions, based upon the Word of God, an objective truth in the very nature and character of God Himself. And this is why, as a parent for the last 8, 9, 10 years, in a concerted effort, which has become the basis for our right from wrong materials and book and curriculum workbooks and everything, is what I've tried to ingrain in my children, to take them from feelings to convictions. Because if we don't, Mom and Dad, we will lose them. Feelings and beliefs, you will not survive with them in a tolerant society. We must develop convictions. Then, this is one of the key factors. I cannot find anywhere in the Word of God, but the Scriptures never call me to be tolerant. Under positive tolerance. You show me one place in the scriptures. Now, the closest to negative tolerance would probably be 1 Corinthians 13. Love endures all things. But it has nothing to do with positive tolerance. I cannot adhere to or endorse or propagate tolerance as it's believed today and still name the name Jesus Christ and stay true to the Word of God. The Bible does not call us to be tolerant. It calls us, and this will be the mark of the Christian. It calls us to be loving. To be loving. Jesus said, don't be tolerant of your enemies. He said, love your enemies. Love those who hate you. Do good unto those who hate you. And one of the greatest marks of the believer will be love. Not just love for the body of Christ. So many people make a lot out of that. Well, look, even sinners love each other. The real mark would not just be our love for each other, but our love for those in the world. The sinners love each other. And Jesus was so clear on that in Luke. We are not commanded to be tolerant, we're commanded to be loving. The opposite of intolerance is not tolerance, it's love. Now, in Micah 6:8, Micah the prophet said something that is probably almost more relevant today than hundreds of years ago when he said it. In Micah 6:8, you've all heard it. What does the Lord your God require of you? But to act justly and to exercise loving kindness in all condition by walking humbly before the Lord. Mom, dad, staff member, in the next 36 to 60 months, you do either one of those things, act justly or exercise loving kindness, you will be labeled a bigot, intolerant, and a heretic. If you exercise Christian love or justice. If you do either thing that the Lord your God requires of us, we will become the bad guys. Say, oh, Josh, this is too radical. No, it isn't. Think it through. We are commanded to love. And yet if I stood up in almost every church in Orlando, in America, in Western world, and the first thing I say when I walk to the podium is, I will not be tolerant, I'll immediately be labeled a heretic by believers. And here's the phrase I hear. You need to be more Christ-like. You need to be, Josh, you need to be more Christ-like. You need to be tolerant. So what are you talking about? If Jesus Christ were here today in flesh, walking the face of the earth, the United Nations would immediately label him the most intolerant man on the face of the earth, and it wouldn't take 33 years for him to be crucified. It wouldn't take 33 months. Need to be more Christ-like? In John 4, Jesus loved a woman at the well. But how intolerant he was according to tolerance today. He said to the woman, go call your husband. She said, I don't have a husband. He exposed her lifestyle as being inferior. Said, that's right. You've had 5 husbands, and the one you're living with now is not even your husband. You're living in adultery. You do that in the average classroom in America today, and you'll be labeled a heretic, a bigot, and intolerant. What right do you have to judge an alternate lifestyle? We're defining down deviancy. That's what Senator Patrick Moynihan put it in one of his recent articles. You probably like to call it now the dumbing of America, dumbing down of America, but he called it defining down deviancy. You don't have unwed mothers, you have alternate lifestyles. And Jesus said, go call your husband. He'd immediately be labeled intolerant today. And then he said, now think of this! Need to be more Christ-like? Jesus, in love! You see, today, the philosophy of today is that we are to be loving, we are to set aside truth in order to love. Jesus never did that. We are to speak the truth in love, and we are loved truthfully. Love does not set aside truth, and truth never sets aside love. Jesus said, now think of the statement. Saying in a classroom in America today, you know not what you worship, but we worship God in spirit and truth. The claim wouldn't be, I don't believe that would be. What right do you have to say that? You're intolerant. You have no right to say that. You're a bigot. And yet if I stood up in the average church today and said, I cannot be tolerant, I'd be labeled a heretic. An immediate phrase is, you got to be more Christ-like. Judge not, that you be not judged. See, we're told to love our enemies, love without hypocrisy, be devoted to one another in love. Here's the problem. Tolerance and love cannot coexist. Say, come on, Jeff. It can't. What does the Lord your God require of you but to act justly and exercise loving kindness? Tolerance and Christian love cannot coexist. And if you exercise Christian love in 36 to 60 months, you will be the bad guy, the heretic, the bigot, and intolerant. See, how do you say that? From understanding Christian love. You see, tolerance says, I must be indifferent. If I see an injustice or what, I must be indifferent. If I see a lifestyle that I believe is detrimental to that person, I must be indifferent. Because the moment I step in to change, I'm being intolerant. I'm saying there's a lifestyle, there's a truth, there's a value, there's a belief, higher hierarchy. Let me illustrate that. It's very interesting when I share this with college students in the audience. It's unbelievable. They almost run to the front. And the first thing they say was this, Josh, everything that you're talking about, I've experienced this year. See, you talk to parents, they say, oh. Talk to Christian leaders, oh, Josh, you're going on. This isn't true. You talk to college students, say, Josh, everything that you've said, I've experienced this year. An illustration. 8 students, I was speaking at Fishnet this last summer, a music festival in Virginia. And 8 students from a school there that's not a liberal school in comparison to secular universities, much more conservative. 8 students. I mean, time I walked to the counseling tent, they must have run all the way from the back. They beat me to the counseling tent. And they came right up and they said, almost in one voice, said, Josh, everything that you said we've experienced. In fact, at our school, if you're accused of intolerance, just accused, before you can take another course, and I've heard this probably 100 times this year, before you can take another course to graduate, you have to take a class in cultural sensitivity. Then one guy spoke up and he said, Josh, I'm very committed to Jesus. It's been the hardest year of my life. I said, tell me about it. He said, I'm an RA. And he said, last summer, a year ago, they took all of us to a conference center for 2 days. And for 2 days, all we heard was tolerance, 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 tolerance. They brought in gays, lesbians, pedophiles, everything. And they said, you must be tolerant. You are to determine, now here's the phrase your kids hear. You are to determine what is right for you and what is wrong for you. And you're not to share or impose your values upon others, but allow others the freedom to determine what is right for them and what is wrong for them and to live it out unhindered. See, every one of your kids hear that phrase. That's under tolerance. Why do you do that? Because all is equal. The moment you say, well, my value is higher than your value, your hierarchy, and that's intolerance and bigotry and a heresy. And he said, Josh, they started out the first day by telling us every hour, you cannot change anyone. Said by the second day, every hour they threatened us. If we catch you trying to change anyone as an RA, you will not only be fired, but it'll go on your record and follow you the rest of your life. And he said, Josh, I have feared this entire year ever mentioning the name Jesus Christ. You see, tolerance says you must be indifferent. Christian love says I must be involved. I cannot set aside truth in acting lovingly, but I act lovingly in a truthful way. And so when I see somebody in a lifestyle that I believe is detrimental to them, contrary to the very word of God and the way they were created, tolerance says, you must be indifferent. Bill, what does Christian love say? I must speak out. I must become involved. But if you do that, you'll be labeled intolerant, a bigot, and a heretic. What does the Lord your God require of you but to act justly and to exercise loving kindness? And it's coming soon where we do either one of those things, we'll be labeled a bigot and intolerant. You see, you cannot act justly unless you can discern right from wrong. Because doing that which is just is living out that which is right. You cannot, please grasp this, you cannot exercise Christian loving kindness unless you can discern right from wrong. Unless you can discern right from wrong. Because love always identifies with that which is right and speaks out against that which is wrong. And yet today in our culture, we've lost the basis of discerning right from wrong. What does the Lord your God require of you but to act justly and to exercise loving kindness? You know, maybe some of you here have never been in a meeting where what the speaker says is literally a wake-up call. And it is today. If we go on with life as usual, we're going to wake up in 36 to 60 minutes shaking our head saying, what happened? Now, this is not a Western culture thing anymore. It's a whole world. I just came back from China, Hong Kong, other places. Same thing. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And our kids are being ingrained in it, students in elementary, junior high, high school, universities. And you take what I have said today, and you listen carefully to people's conversations around you, young people and all, it'll start to fit into a pattern. And I have so many parents say to me 2-3 weeks after they hear me speak, Josh, I can't believe it. It was like a puzzle coming together. As I started to look at my own life, my own feelings and everything, you nailed it. We are facing one of the greatest challenges. And one reason it's one of the greatest challenges is that it's so subtle. And do you understand what I'm saying here? This undermines everything that we believe in. You talk about prayer all you want. We can talk about revival. We can talk about evangelism, everything. But if we let the basis of truth erode, everything erodes with it in the lives of our children. This is why youth workers now, I'm hearing something I never heard before. Bill, I'm hearing this. Most youth workers and things, you'd hear this. Well, if we don't resolve this, we are going to lose this generation. Now I'm hearing this. Josh will not only lose this generation, we will have already lost the next generation. And up until about 30 months ago, I never heard that phrase. Take to heart what I've shared. We're going to take a break. And then when I come back, and in two brief sessions, go into the whole foundation of discerning right from wrong. Because especially you as parents, you got to realize that we are the first generation to not have passed its values on to its children. The first generation. And I want to start sharing with you how I believe we do pass our values on to our children, to the students we work with and people we work with. Wow. Let's take a 10-minute break. Before we do, I want to say this. Somewhere here, Tony, where are you, buddy? Where are the books? Table outside. Now, the Right from Wrong book was designed for parents and pastors and youth workers, even though young people are eating it up. But it deals with this whole issue of objective truth and a basis biblically for discerning right from wrong. But here's the problem. Even a lot of you this morning, as I've talked in this subject, you're kind of sitting there saying, I just really don't understand it. And the reason is, you're like me. My mind does not think philosophically. It thinks objectively. And so this whole right from wrong campaign, I've had to go into a weak area. But you know, sometimes it's so healthy to do that because you have to depend on the Holy Spirit more than you ever do as when you step into your strong areas. And the problem is, like in the book, you explain the truth and everything, and a lot of moms and dads will say, I just don't understand it. So interwoven throughout the book is a dramatic sequence of three families. And so I take that issue of truth, I state it, I explain it, and then I take you in to the drama. And I let you see that truth in a real life situation. What we found with parents will say this: now I understand it. When they see it in a real life dramatic, or suck it, they'll say this. And this is one of the biggest comments is, now I understand why my son said that. Now I understand why my daughter did that. Then the book that goes with it is called The Truth Slayers. It's our fourth novel. And it's a novel plus. And what I did was take, and this is right from wrong for junior high and high school students. And I take the children from the three families interwoven through the right from wrong book, and I take those same kids into school and developed a whole realistic drama around it called The Truth Slayers. And when my son read it, he said, Dad, this is the most realistic thing I have ever read. Then there's five curriculum workbooks. I wish I'd had the genius to create them. I didn't. Thank God for the Baptist Sunday School Board and Dr. Jimmy Draper. I think Dr. Jimmy Draper is probably one of the five most key men in America to see revival. I really do, and I don't have time to explain why. I've known Jimmy for 25, 30 years. I've always respected him. Now, I admire him. And they came, and they said, we want a partnership. They had just gone through and finished up kind of experiencing God. And the Sunday School Board went to their knees and said, God, where do we take our people? What's the next step? And they got a hold of the transcript, Jimmy did. And he ran off some copies of the Right From Wrong book and handed out to all of his board members. And he said, almost with unanimity, they said, this is what we've got to do. And Jimmy said, I agree with you. He said, then one of them spoke up, said, but it's not our material. And here's the brilliance and the godly life of Jimmy Draper. He says, it doesn't matter. We've got to do it. Well, they called us up, and the strongest area of the Southern Baptist is curriculum. It really is. No one can touch them in the area of curriculum. They said, we would like to work with you not to create workbooks, not to create curriculum, but to create curriculum workbooks. And they created five. We worked with them, took the material from right from wrong and everything. Oh, what they came up with. Five workbooks that go along with the video series and everything, but they stand on their own. And when it came to the college one called Out of the Moral Maze, I vetoed it. I said, Jimmy, no. You don't sell books to college students for the most part. Like in the Southern Baptist, in all the year history of the Southern Baptist, their huge student network, Bill, they've never sold over 5,000 of any one resource to the college ministry, ever. And I said, Jimmy, with what it costs, he said, Josh, we've got to do it. So they brought together some of their top people. We brought together some of our top people. In the first, I think, 6 weeks, they went through 13,000, almost three times any resource they'd ever done. And these workbooks are designed to take from feelings to convictions. That's the purpose of it. To develop convictions. And they're for small children from 1 to 3rd grade, and then 4th to 6th grade, and then 7th to 11th grade, and then 12th grade through college, and then adults, called Truth Matters. And in the first 5 to 6 months, they have moved more than they, 5 times what they had projected for 5 years. They are going through, this is staggering, over 10,000 a week. And it's just beginning. The advertising isn't even out there. And this has never happened before with something like a curriculum workbook. And the reason I got excited about it is my daughter, who is 9 years old, Heather, she heard me explain these materials to my staff one night in Dallas at a dinner. And after the dinner was over, about 8 o'clock, she says, Daddy, can I have the one for older children? I said, sure. We get in the car to drive home, about 40 minutes. She said, Dad, will you put the back light on in the van? And I said, yeah, okay. I turn it on. I looked in the mirror. She was going through the workbook. We got home. She finished it at 12:45 in the morning. Three times she came into my study and said something like this, Daddy, I don't understand this. And this is where I saw the genius of what the Southern Baptists had done. I never once had to give her the answer. I said, well, honey, what does it say here? What? Oh, I don't need you, Dad. The next morning, a 9-year-old said, Daddy, will you get me the one for the younger kids? I brought it home that night, and the next day she finished it in one day. And then think of this. 9 years old, I've never had this happen before. She says, Daddy, will you get me the teacher's guide, which is twice as thick as the two others put together? She said, I think if I go through that, I'll even learn more. Now, it took her almost 2 weeks because a teacher guide is literally twice as thick as the other two put together. I would believe that my 9-year-old daughter right now knows more about discerning right from wrong than the majority of Christian kids in the secular universities, even Christian colleges, at 9 years of age, because of the genius of the Southern Baptists, their Sunday school board, and the vision that Dr. Jimmy Draper had.